Hello everyone, welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Kayla Jenkins. I'm the Communications Assistant at the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior. Thank you all so much for making yourselves available today for our webinar. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see a Handouts tab, and here you'll find the slides for today. Feel free to download those and take notes as you follow along with today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type your questions into the question box at any time throughout this presentation so that we can moderate them to our presenter. When the webinar ends today, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future journal clubs. We're currently reviewing topics for the upcoming fall semester. And lastly, watch for a follow-up email to be sent by the end of the day on Thursday. That'll include a link to the recording for today, the slide handout, and also the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So our moderator is Virginia Quick. She's assistant research professor at Rutgers University.
Great. Thank you, Kayla. And it's a pleasure today to have our speaker. She's actually from Hawaii. So I know it's really early for her this morning. So I really appreciate her getting this webinar. This is Dr. Monica Kozlowski-Esquivel. She is a nutrition lecturer in the Department of Human Nutrition, Food, and Animal Sciences at the University of Hawaii and director of the Health Promotion and Disease Prevention at Waianae Coast Comprehensive Health Center. And her work focuses on health promotion and disease prevention efforts that are multi-level in nature and community-based. Now, Monica completed her doctoral graduate studies in nutrition at the University of Hawaii at Manoa and was a recipient of the Children's Healthy Living Program for Remote Underserved Minority Populations in the Pacific Region Training Scholarship. So it's a pleasure to have her here today to be able to talk about some of the work that she's done. The topic is about the influence of teachers' personal health behaviors on operationalizing obesity prevention policy in Head Start preschools, a project of the Children's Healthy Living Program. So with that, I will let her take it away from here.
Good morning, and thank you for that introduction. This is Monica. I work at, we probably should have gone over this one, Waianae Coast Comprehensive Health Center. It's the largest federally qualified community health center in our state here in Hawaii. But thank you all for coming, and I apologize for the mix up in the time, and I'm happy you're all here. So the objectives for today are first to review, do a brief review of the literature on factors that affect the efficacy of child care center wellness policy implementation on the obesogenic environment in preschool settings. Also, we'll discuss how the Children's Healthy Living Program wellness policy intervention was designed to address the multiple levels of obesity influences in these Head Start classrooms. And lastly, I'll just go over a few key strategies and lessons learned from this program. A brief introduction. I know many of my colleagues on and more peers and friends on the US mainland, they think, oh, you have such great weather in Hawaii. How could there ever be any obesity problems? However, there was a state of emergency declared in our Pacific region due to the high prevalence of obesity-related non-communicable diseases and a high prevalence of adult obesity. And we know that childhood overweight and obesity is a risk factor for the condition in adults. However, childhood prevalence of obesity and overweight in the Pacific and Hawaii ranges anywhere from 21 to 39% in our 2 to 8 year olds. And in 2007, we found about a third of our children in Hawaii are entering kindergarten at an unhealthy weight, and that remained unchanged from 2003. While a recent national study showed a decline in obesity in this age range, our state of Hawaii was not included in that data analysis. So a little background about the Children's Healthy Living Program. This was a USDA grant for childhood obesity prevention across the USA, affiliated Pacific. So our communities that we worked with ranged anywhere from Hawaii and Alaska to Guam, Palau, the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Islands. The USDA, this grant had a training program, which was mentioned before. Also, it included a community randomized control intervention trial. There were five jurisdictions across 18 communities. The communities were selected based on percentage of Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders, so at least 25% per U.S. Census. Our target population was 2 to 8 year olds in the children of these communities. And here's just some of the information that was collected by the larger CHIL study. First, just to make sure we're all on the same page, for determining childhood overweight and obesity, we use the BMI compared against a reference data. So for classification, we have CDC BMI percentile cut points for overweight and obesity. Those are listed below. As well as in this study and for CHIL, we use BMI Z-scores as our continuous variable for determining childhood overweight or assessing childhood overweight and obesity. And I think I get a lot of questions sometimes about BMI Z scores from people who aren't familiar, but it's just that BMI, a child's BMI in standard deviations from the mean. Okay, causes of obesity. So, you know, at the sole energy imbalance is the sole purpose or cause of childhood overweight and obesity. But what we know is that there's a variety of levels individual and environment interactions, interpersonal, organizational, community, and policy level factors that affect that energy imbalance where energy intake is exceeding expenditure. We also know that obesogenic environments, some of those components are the physical environments, so perhaps the availability and the access to fruits and vegetables and safe places to be physically active, the economics around food costs and income levels. Here in Hawaii, we have some of the highest food costs and our income really does not match some of those high costs of living. Political, so there's been lots of policies in the news lately that are changing. I think just this morning I read a headline from the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics that some Trump policy was going to affect child meal programs. And then lastly, social and cultural beliefs, traditions, those can also play an effect on the obesogenic environment. Here in the Pacific, there is a tendency for families to prefer their children to be a little on the heavier side, you know, and that's a sign of health in our society, in our culture. So with Head Start and childhood obesity, we probably all know that Head Start is a federally funded preschool for children from low-income families. It does have a strong emphasis on education and health. One of the health requirements in Head Start are biannual growth assessments. There's also meal requirements. Head Start preschool classrooms are mandated to participate in the child and adult care food program, which outlines minimum requirements for meal components that are reimbursable. What you might not know is that Head Start or very similar ECE or early childhood education programs are delivered throughout those U.S. affiliated Pacific Islands and territories. So they have programs in American Samoa, Guam, Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Islands, and even Palau. So it was a natural partner for us in the CHIL program. Recently, a Head Start study out of Michigan showed a positive effect of Head Start on childhood obesity, where there was a decline in BMI Z-score in obese children after 1 year of Head Start participation. So current Head Start nutrition and health policy. So some of the policies come down from the Office of Administration for Children and Families, the Office of Head Start. Certain things, one thing is that Head Starts are mandated to identify individual child nutritional needs, and they do that with measuring height and weight, questionnaires about family eating patterns and cultural food preferences. And then meal and snack provision and mealtime policies are also included. But meal and snack provision policies are state things like foods are high in nutrients, low in fat, sugar, and salt. Staff and volunteers are to be eating the same food and family style meals to the extent possible. So some of the language in these policies leave some room for strengthening, as well as some additional policies to help improve implementation of these. Wrong way, sorry. Okay, so our literature review, what you see on this table are the outcomes measured by various ECE or childhood education policy interventions. So some few studies measure child outcomes. The majority of studies will include a classroom observation or self-report. And then the intervention activities range anywhere from CBPR or community-based participatory research practices, employee wellness, training and technical assistance. And what we've seen is that the significant results are improvements in classroom feeding practices, enhanced teacher and parent communication, and classroom fruit and vegetable availability. And we've also seen that improvement in obesity prevention best practices being implemented as a result of some of these policies. And at a child level, in the two studies that assess child outcomes, we've seen that these policy efforts can have a positive impact on obesity prevalence, BMI, Z-score, and can decrease juice consumption. So some of the summary problem statements, multi-level interventions are needed for childhood overweight and obesity prevention and treatment. And these ECE-based policy interventions have the potential to support some prevention efforts, but none of these have been tested on Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander populations. And that's it for today. Sorry, those two last two bullets are from a different presentation. Okay, this was a conceptual framework from start to finish for this Head Start policy intervention. I'm going to focus today on the moderating and mediating aspects of this larger study, but it did include a portion of intervention development, which included Head Start teacher focus groups, policy implementation, where the mediating factor was some teacher that we'll talk about today. Mediating factors for the intervention effect included teacher nutrition misconceptions, efficacy, priorities, and knowledge. And the moderating effect also included in this paper. And some of the classroom outcomes are the physical activity and nutrition environment. The original study did include child outcomes of BMI, fruit and vegetable intake, and a long-term outcome of evaluating Head Start data for child BMI monitoring in the Pacific. So policy goals are to create classroom environments that support energy balance, but few studies have assessed this effect on child outcomes. Most of those interventions that did include a teacher or staff activity found correlations between center staff, class mealtime feeding practices, classroom nutrition education, and one study did find a positive effect of teacher self-efficacy on communicating nutrition information with parents. And in that center, parents were actually bringing fruits and vegetables from meals from home, and they saw an increased frequency in the servings of fruits and vegetables served in the centers. So please, sorry, again, ignore the child hypotheses. We're going to focus today on the classroom level hypotheses, which were that an improved nutrition and physical activity classroom environment would be mediated by teachers' beliefs and moderated by implementation fidelity and teachers' health behaviors and health status. So for design and participants, this is a 7-month intervention within the CHIL randomized community trial. So what you see on the right is a map of Oahu. And so the red boxes indicate the Head Start clusters and the blue ovals indicate the CHIL randomized communities. So we selected Head Start classrooms that are grouped by cluster that contain a CHIL randomized community. What this resulted in was 11 Head Start classrooms in the intervention where 220 children were sampled and 12 Head Starts in the control group where 240 children were sampled. Children were all ages 3 to 5 and were from low-income households. Honolulu Community Action Program, or HCAP Head Start, is our local agency that delivers Head Start programs on Oahu. Head Start teachers were consented at cluster area meetings. Children and parents were recruited from Head Start classrooms at various meetings at the start and end of the day. And parents did fill out some information, informed consent and questionnaires, and were given some remuneration. I apologize if you can hear my dog barking in the background, the other room. Okay, so this table, referring back to the focus group that was used to develop this intervention, so we had three themes there, that theme one being that teachers, they really valued being a positive influence on the child. Theme two was that teachers valued being role models. And theme three was that they needed more resources to implement policies addressing childhood obesity. And so from those three focus group themes, you'll see that the four kind of bunches of policy intervention included integration of nutrition and physical activity promotion. And so some of those activities included things like at regular monthly Head Start meetings, teachers were given classroom, family, and employee wellness materials. They received Head Start staff and teachers receive training on nutrition and health at these monthly meetings. Employee wellness activities were also included. And so employee wellness activities, this is a really one of my favorite parts of this study. So teachers and Head Start staff were given activities that coincided with the classroom activities for the children. So for example, if the kids' activity was related to eating from a rainbow, we did an employee wellness activity that it was like a rainbow salad day where they saw that you could make healthy potluck lunches and eat from a rainbow. So the activities coincided with one another. At the third level of policy intervention, we had some changes to the foods and beverages served, where we eliminated 100% fruit juice to increase the availability of fruit in the intervention classrooms. And we also limited high energy, low nutrient menu items. Things like fried noodles and oven-baked fried potatoes were removed from the menus. And then another thing that was also included was family style meals. So I guess most Head Starts across the mainland have family style meals. Here in Hawaii, we have a different kind of situation and the majority of our classrooms don't practice family style meals. So we did include that. And then lastly, the policy included a change for community partnerships where we pursued partnerships to ensure sustainability of these monthly activities. So some examples were local farmers for vegetables for employee taste testing, local health center. The local health center provided professionals to help out with information on physical activity. And then lastly, the meal vendor that was providing the meals was used to provide some nutrition training and education for staff as well as families. This figure just demonstrates how the policy intervention affects the various levels of the social ecologic model, with a policy level change, engaging Head Start teachers as a community in policy development, organizational changes included training and technical assistance, changes to the meal service and food served. Interpersonal levels were affected by supporting teachers as role models through those employee wellness activities. And lastly, at a child, individual child level, the classroom health curriculum was really affecting them. And then again, also looking at those policy intervention activities and the obesogenic environment. And here we're just demonstrating that we're touching on the political, social, physical, as well as economic environment here in our Head Start classrooms. And I always like to point out that, you know, we changed the fruit availability, we changed the fruit juice being served in the classroom. These children in our low-income communities, they have lots of access to fruit juice and sugar-sweetened beverages. And so we thought, really, this is an opportunity to give them the chance to try more fruits versus fruit juice. So again, the outcome variables at the classroom level, we use the Environment and Policy Assessment and Observation, or EPAO tool, that gives us a score for the nutrition environment as well as the physical activity environment. I'll go over the monthly implementation survey and the child care provider healthy eating and activity surveys used in the next few slides. Okay, classroom variables. So the EPAO was used pre and post intervention and gave us a nutrition, physical activity, and total score. Those ranged anywhere from 0 to 20. The monthly implementation survey was conducted monthly. It was created by Yin et al. And modified slightly. It gave us an implementation fidelity score, so the number of classroom activities per month, as well as an idea of the teacher's change in health status and health behaviors. The last survey was a teacher-child nutrition survey, CCPHEA, and that was pre and post intervention. And it is a validated tool and protocol to assess teachers' child nutrition efficacy, priority, misconceptions, and knowledge. For the implementation survey, so I just wanted to point out some of the questions that we asked about the teacher's personal health behaviors. Things like, have you seen improvement in your knowledge and skill of physical activity? Anywhere down to, have you seen improvements in your cholesterol? Have you seen improvements in your overall physical health? This survey was asked on a monthly basis, and it was scored 1 for yes, 0 for no, and we took the average for each teacher over the 7 months. And then for the priority questions, I wanted to point these out specifically in that nutrition survey. In your role in working with children, what priority do you put on health promotion and childhood obesity prevention? So here in this survey, a higher score indicates less priority and is less desirable. And then, you know, other questions were included. How often do you communicate with parents about their child's food consumption while in your care? So in relationship between the research question was, is the relationship between wellness policy implementation and the classroom environment mediated by changes in teacher priority, knowledge, misconceptions, or efficacy? We used a series of linear regression models, and we controlled for baseline in the study group for this analysis. To review a little bit about the mediation analysis, we followed the Barron and Kenny protocol it's published in 1986. And here we have an independent variable, the mediating variable, and dependent variable. So the first step is to confirm that the independent variable is a significant predictor of the dependent variable. So we're looking at that relationship C there. The second step is that we look to confirm that the independent variable significantly predicts the mediating variable, so confirming relationship A. And then the third step is that we confirm that the mediator is a significant predictor of the dependent variable while controlling for the independent, so confirming B. So in our case, and then the last step is that when the mediator and the independent variable are used simultaneously to predict the dependent variable, we see that the relationship C is either greatly reduced and should become non-significant. With us, we looked at the policy intervention effects on the classroom environment and to see if those teacher-child nutrition surveys were the mediating variable between that effect that we saw. For the second research question, we sought to describe or test the relationship between policy intervention in those classroom environments to see if it was moderated by the level of policy implementation or any changes in the teacher's personal health behaviors or indicators. So for this, there was a series of multiple regression models, and it tested the interaction between the intervention and moderating variable. So here we have three different relationships that we're testing in a moderating analysis. So the first is that we're testing the independent variable's effect on the dependent variable. And then we're looking at the moderating variable's effect on that dependent variable. And then it should affect the direction or the strength of the relationship of A. So when we see that the independent variable and moderator, there should be an interaction, and the product is the product of the independent variable and moderator. So if the C, if the relationship C is significant, then there is in fact a moderating effect of the independent variable and moderating variable. So here we're looking, first we test to see if the policy intervention has a significant impact on the classroom environment. When we add those teacher health behaviors and indicators to that model, what we're looking for is a change in the direction or the strength of the relationship between the intervention and the classroom. And then when we add those simultaneously, we also want to see that interaction. So in a classroom level, we saw between the intervention and the control classrooms, these are the baseline scores. So no significant differences between the two groups. When we talk about the policy implementation effects on the classroom environment, so we did find that there was a significant impact on the physical activity in the total environment. From the policy intervention. There was not a significant effect on the nutrition environment, nor were there any significant effects, differences between the two groups on the child care provider healthy eating activity survey scores. When we look at the mediating relationship between the teacher priority, knowledge, and misconceptions and the policy effect, so if you look down at the bottom, we see that EPAO, the total score, in the original regression model, it was significant. And when we add the teacher priority factor into that mediation model, we see the difference between the two groups decrease and the relationship becomes non-significant. And so that is in effect saying that once we control for teacher priority in the model, it is what's mediating that relationship between the intervention and the classroom effect. This is the moderating the multiple regression table for the moderating effects. And so what you see at the study group and health behavior indicators, so there was a significant interaction between these two factors, parameters, and the total environment score, EPAO score, as well as with the physical activity score. And this kind of makes it a little bit easier to see. So these are the effects of the moderating analysis on the teacher health behavior indicators and the EPAO scores by intervention and control group. So what you see on the left are the health indicators, classrooms where teachers answered health indicators below average. So these are teachers who reported lower than average improvements in their own health healthy behaviors. And then on the right, we see those are classrooms where teachers responded higher than average health indicators. So they were saying things more often than the average, that they were improving their diet or improving their physical activity. And so when we look at just the intervention and control groups for the physical activity scores, what we see in those solid bars is that in the intervention groups, when teachers are indicating health indicators above the mean, we see a significant improvement in the physical activity environment. Whereas in the control group, you see the opposite relationship. And so this is demonstrating if we were to extend those two lines across the screen, they would actually cross over. And that is a sign of the interaction between those two variables. When we look at the total classroom score, you can again see that in classrooms, in the intervention classrooms where teachers were also improving their own health behaviors, there was a very positive effect on the physical activity environment, whereas teachers in the intervention group that had lower than average means, lower than average health indicator outcomes, they had actually a decrease in the intervention effect on their classroom environment. So these are showing us that there's something about this teacher health indicators that's having an effect on the policy's effect in their classrooms. So policy implementation is more effective in classrooms where teachers are also improving their own health indicators, at least above average improvements. And so when we kind of tie this back to our literature review, some significant things, the Lanigan, the enhanced study where the CCPHEA, the teacher efficacy misconceptions and knowledge survey came from, they had some similar intervention activities, and they also saw some similar positive effects where teachers' knowledge was associated with childhood classroom feeding practices. In this Gosliner and the Contra Costa County Child Care Survey, they saw improved teacher efficacy in communicating with parents and increased likelihood for fruits and vegetables as a result of a policy intervention. And then something else that I wanted to point out for that DECAL study, Lynn et al., about halfway down the bottom of your screen. So they also saw significant improvements in the nutrition and physical activity scores, but they saw a greater improvement in the physical activity subscores compared to the nutrition. And that's kind of similar to what we saw. We weren't able to see any significant impact on our policy implementation, our policy intervention on those nutrition scores. And so other studies kind of also saw a lesser effect on those nutrition environment scores like we did. So some limitations include Head Start classrooms outside of those CHIL randomized communities. So if you go back to the CHIL randomized communities, they were matched communities. And so what this resulted in is there was significantly different race distribution. I didn't present that slide, but in the intervention classrooms, we had a much higher and significantly higher proportion of Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander children, but we did control for that in analysis. The EPAO, repeated measures of this variable could have helped to account for some day-to-day variation. You know, this is an observation score where a researcher goes into the classroom and observes, and we just did it on one day, pre and post the intervention, and so repeated measures would have been helpful. And then lastly, there was a lack of individual level physical activity assessment. Oh, I think there's too many assesses in that assessment. And so with that, you know, if the teachers had reported some level, or if we were able to get a more subjective measurement of teacher physical activity, we might have been able to better tie that relationship between the teachers and that effect on the physical activity environment. So teacher priority about child nutrition. So teachers' priority mediated the relationship between policy and environmental changes that were observed. And so we can think about how future interventions could focus on ways to increase teachers' priorities of childhood obesity prevention. There were previous studies that talked about, teachers' lack of priority being a barrier to policy implementation. And so we showed that, you know, when you do have enhanced teacher priority, we do see some effect, positive effect on policy implementation environment and the environment effect. So teachers' health behaviors and their health status did moderate the effect between the intervention and the environmental changes. So this was supporting the inclusion of some employee wellness activities to have a positive increase in the intervention effect. And again, it would have been, you know, nice to get some other kind of subjective measures of teacher health behaviors. The fruit juice and family style meal service and the nutrition scores. So while we did make some significant changes to the meals and the nutrition that was being served in these Head Start classrooms, these changes probably weren't large enough to shift those actual EPAO scores. We did see in some of our preliminary results that there was a slight increase in fruit consumption, but it wasn't significant. And we think that could have been from eliminating fruit juice and having enhanced fruit availability. And then the other thing was that family style meal service was interrupted on measurement day. So on measurement day, intake was also assessed, as well as the environmental scores. So those scores are not reflective of one of the policy changes. And then, as I mentioned before, other studies have shown larger improvements and greater improvements in the physical activity environment as a result of these policy implementations. So, you know, perhaps the physical activity environment, there's we see just larger changes. So in conclusion, you know, Head Start teachers can play an important role in obesity prevention efforts in these preschool settings. So including them in some policy level interventions can help to address the physical activity environment in Head Start classrooms. I think if we can, in the focus groups that we did, in the focus groups we did, we found that teachers really valued being a role model. And so I think that kind of can play into this idea that if we're improving teachers' health outcomes and they are having positive changes in their own health, that can improve their ability to be role models in these Head Start settings. And then lastly, I just want to acknowledge the CHILL program funding, the intervention staff and administrative team, and then the HCAP Head Start staff, teachers and families, and the committee members are actually the co-authors of this paper. And with that, I will open it up to any questions from the audience.
Great, thank you so much for presenting and sharing with us some of the work that you've done with Head Start and the communities that you work with. For those that have any questions, I do encourage you to put them in the GoToWebinar box area, and I'll moderate those questions to our presenter today. So again, thank you for sharing this lovely presentation with us. I thought maybe you could tell us any plans moving forward with some of the project work that you've done already.
Yeah, absolutely. So that picture down there at the bottom, that is actually the Waianae Coast, where one of the intervention communities is. And that's where the health center that I work at. So like I mentioned before, our health center is one of the largest federally qualified health centers across the state. And I oversee a department that kind of acts as the liaison between healthcare and community health and addressing some of these kinds of higher level social determinants of health. So some of the work I do at the health center is actually to kind of expand upon, you know, the health promotion activities that are available in these classrooms, so we can continue the relationship between the employee wellness activities and such. I also referred to the classrooms throughout the presentation as the control classrooms, and one of our co-authors probably would have a cow, because in community-based participatory research, we really, they were delayed intervention. So the following year, those classrooms got similar interventions throughout the following school year. And so we do have some analysis that we can look at to see if they, you know, what the effect was there. And then I know with the new CACFP meal regulations, we're going back in to try to see, you know, if there's any way that we can support meal vendors with training or technical assistance to implement that. One really interesting kind of larger system change that we have, a lot of our Head Start classrooms are located on public school or Department of Education campuses. And on those campuses, we are mandated, the Head Start is mandated to receive lunch from the school cafeteria. And that plays a big, it becomes a big barrier in our state to changing the meals and changing meal patterns and foods that are offered. We have centralized procurement of our meals for the DOE here. So literally all public schools across the state are served the exact same meals. So if you're trying to change any of those, you're changing it at a whole state level. And so that has been a barrier in kind of expanding the intervention, the policy intervention.
Mm-hmm. Right. Great. Thank you for sharing that with us. So I know that you've, you know, done this intervention in a number of different Head Start locations in Hawaii. Is there plans to expand it or even consider other age groups and other settings where students get like after school programming, where they get snacks and so forth, where policies can be put into place?
Yeah, that's a really great opportunity that we have. Unfortunately, with the CHILL program, this intervention, this CHILL grant is over. And so some of our partners at University of Hawaii at Manoa in the Office of Public Health Studies, they've done a lot of work with those after school programs and the YMCAs that we have here run. We call them the A+ programs. They're all after school. And so they've done a lot more of that work with those after school partners in older settings. In the Waianae community, we work with some of those after-school programs, and they do different, it's more about infusing their curriculum with the older kids on, you know, with preschool children, it's, you know, giving them the food, and the older kids, we're kind of trying to teach them, you know, why and how do you prepare it, and so we've done some of that work after school in this community.
Okay, yeah, great, thanks. Now, you did mention some of the different survey instruments that you used to evaluate, I guess, the effectiveness of the intervention. Were those tools created by you, or were they adapted from other, you know, instruments?
Yeah, the
That's about
EPAO, yeah. I'll go back to that slide.
it.
No, yeah, the EPAO, they're all they I didn't create them. So they're all validated and well used. So Ward, those are the knapsack studies and the nutrition and physical activities in childcare settings. Sorry, the acronym is escaping me. But no, those are widely used studies for or widely used surveys for assessing the environmental effects in these studies.
Great, thanks. Let me think. I don't think we have any other questions from the audience. But so I guess maybe for, one last question that I might have in case somebody else has a question while you're trying to answer it. If you were to do things differently, what would that be? If there was one thing that you might have thought didn't work as well and want to improve upon.
Yeah, that's a really, I think we always think of those things. If there was one thing I could do differently, I think that we underestimated we did underestimate the effect of some of those teacher health behavior outcomes. Originally, we're just looking at the health status and health behaviors of and how those were changing just to kind of, because we did include the employee wellness activity. And I wish that we had gone, if I had more funds and possibly a little bit more time, I would go back and try to figure out, do a little bit more subjective analysis of those teachers' changes in their health status. Give them either, have them track their physical activity, possibly with an accelerometer or a Fitbit or something, or maybe get some diet recalls. Just get some more specific information on what changes were they making to their health and their health behaviors. And I think that could have given us a little bit more understanding. We saw improvements in the physical activity environment. And so it's like maybe teachers are being more active themselves and they're walking around while the kids are outside playing or they're outside more often. That could have played an effect. And so I wish I don't, but I can't say that because I don't know because I didn't measure it. So I would like some more subjective assessment of teachers' change in their health behaviors and health status.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. Now, do you believe this will be sustainable in the places that you've implemented this intervention?
Yes, I do believe it's sustainable. I think by including those community partnerships, what we were able to do in that year was, they weren't relying on me as a researcher and our research project to implement some of these employee wellness activities. That vendor policy never changed, never went back. So the meal vendor is still not serving juice in those classrooms and not serving things like fried noodles and those baked fried potatoes. And so those policy changes, have a long-standing effect. And what's neat about that to me is that that vendor doesn't just provide meals for this Head Start. She provides for other programs that are served throughout our communities. And so some of those similar meals are and those practices are being kind of implemented in those other settings as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much again. We don't have any other questions. So I really appreciate the time calling in this early for you in Hawaii and sharing with us today some of the work that you've done. And I wish you the best of luck and your continued successes. So I'll let Kayla kind of close out today's webinar.
Great. Thank you, Virginia, and thank you again to Monica for leading our session today and all of you for joining us. Just a reminder that when I do close the session, there will be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback. Watch for an email on Thursday this week with links for today's recording, the handout, and your CEU certificate for attending today. Be sure to register for our Global Foods webinar this Thursday, May 4th. This webinar is free to all attendees, so we encourage you all to join us and to also share this webinar with your colleagues. That concludes today's session. Thank you all for joining us.